Hello, great to be with you again, Tariq Hussain, for Pod in Action. Lovely to be with you again. Today, I'm really pleased to have an opportunity to have a wide-ranging chat with Dr. Liz Norris, who is our head of GP School for Kent, Surrey and Sussex Health Education England. I really appreciate Liz spending some time with us today. Discussion about lots of different things. We met around the middle of December, a bit of ice on the ground. Snowy, broad blast of Arctic air, and unfortunately a bit of Streptococcus around as well. So those were the sort of things that were at the top of our minds. However, we talked mainly around some of the innovations within the GP school, lots and lots of bits on trainee support. So that's, I think, an interesting thing to listen to. We touched on trainers, capacity. Some of the exams and some of the upcoming exam changes that we believe are on the horizon. I think it's hopefully really helpful for everyone just to have a little bit of an insight into the sort of work that Liz does, how passionate she is about caring for others, caring for trainees, and how passionate she is that we get those things right to make sure that people. Achieve the place that they can within our GP school. So, really appreciate Liz giving up her time. Definitely worth a listen if you're considering some of those issues that might be affecting you as a trainee, and hopefully will be interesting for others to listen to. We'll be back again in the new year. And I'm not sure when this one will come out, so it might be already in the new year. Otherwise, festive greetings to you all, and I will be back with you with Pod 10 in the later in 2023. Thank you. To find a time to meet. Welcome, Liz. There's a few different things that I thought that we might be able to talk about, but maybe looking at the GP school in its entirety would be a good place to start. And maybe also introducing yourself to the listeners. I'm sure a lot of people will know you and they'll have seen your name a lot and had probably some direct communication from you. But I thought this might be a chance for you just to tell people a little bit about who you are and your role so that they can hear it directly from you.
Thanks, Tariq. So I'm Liz Norris. I'm a GP from Mid-Sussex. I was a GP trainer and GP partner for just under 20 years before taking on this role. And I currently work 4 days a week for Health Education England as the head of GP school, and also still do a day a week clinically as a GP in a local emergency department, although I did work in practices all through the pandemic. So, yeah, I'm the head of the GP school. I absolutely love my job. As a GP school, we have approximate intake of about 285 new GP trainees each year and range between about 9 and 960 trainees enrolled in us at any one time. I think we're really proud to say in the last 3 years, we've had over 600 GPs accredit. Yeah, we're really proud of those figures despite being as part of the pandemic. I think we're a very diverse deanery. We currently have approximately 57% of our trainees qualified abroad, and we feel very passionately about being very inclusive and very welcoming to all of our trainees. And particular as a GP school, I really think we focus on the support for our trainees and the well-being and success of our trainees.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really important word. I mean, coming on to the changes within the GP school, I know one of your passions is differential attainment. It's something we've talked a lot about, both, within sort of the HE Dean team, but also locally. For those that are maybe not quite sure what that really means or not really quite sure how it applies to them, thinking about people like trainers as well as trainees, what sort of message would you want to give around differential attainment?
So differential attainment is one of those buzzwords that's become very popular. There's an awful lot of work and support and information on it. And there are some variations in view. I think very simply in the GP school in KSS, we just want attainment for all. So actually, I very passionately believe in we all want to support all of our trainees to attain what they should be attaining. And there are differentials in the attainment. We know that international medical graduates can take longer to CCT and have different educational needs. I mean, if you think about it, we have trainees who can be incredibly experienced, competent doctors in a different speciality in a different country. And then they arrive in the UK to start their GP training. They can be first weekend on call, acute medicine or care of the elderly. They've never worked in the NHS before, maybe did general medicine 10 or 15 years ago. I'm not sure how I would cope with being an acute geriatric SHO. And, you know, our trainees can really struggle. And it's so important that we acknowledge the difficulties that these trainees face, and we do everything we can to ensure that they are supported to integrate into the NHS. And it isn't them integrating with us. That was a bad phrase. I very much believe we all need to be aware of everybody's cultures and everybody's experience. And it is not about expecting a trainee or a colleague to acclimatise to what we do or to come to our culture. It is very much to be aware of the cultural backgrounds, to be aware of the educational differences, and really work together to ensure that our trainees are supported to succeed, rather than become overwhelmed and drown within such a short period of time of starting.
Yeah, I think that was an interesting article I shared with you, because I thought it was important that rather than seeing some of the doctors coming in as cogs in a machine and just being able to fit immediately into place, it's much more understanding them as an individual. What is it that they can bring, and how is it that you can best get the qualities that they've got out so that they can, you know, sort of achieve what it is that they're looking for, you know, rather than just you will fit in and this is exactly how you must do it. I think those days are gone now.
Oh, absolutely, totally. And I think it's also really important to recognise how trainees can struggle to ask for help or to flag up when they're running into difficulties. And I think that sometimes needs a bit of a mindset shift from their supervisors, because we all think, well, we've offered support, they know it's available, you know, they've just got to learn to ask for help. I heard somebody actually say recently, and actually that's, if you're in a position where you're incredibly stressed, you're struggling, you know you're struggling, it can really be seen that you're failing, or they fear they're going to be kicked out of their training program if they actually admit they've got a problem. If they admit they can't do the e-portfolio or they're behind in their learning logs, it becomes this overwhelming problem where they feel to tell a supervisor, to contact a TPD or their ES to say, I'm really struggling, will look bad on them. It will mean that they're incompetent or that they're a failure, rather than having the realization that actually, no, we're just here to help them. I regularly say my whole remit and purpose for being is just to help people, to help the trainees particular, to, you know, I have this enforced super support for trainees that are struggling. And one of our key principles in the culture and the ethos within the GP school is that we don't believe in a trainee deficit model. You know, we don't have difficult trainees. We have trainees with difficulties that need our support. And we absolutely are here to support people and to believe in people. And I think believing in people, believing in the trainees, is their most fundamental principle, because people flourish if someone believes in them, if someone's there to support them.
Yeah, flourish is a nice word, isn't it? And one thing that's sort of escalated, moved on, changed in my time is the amount of support that the GP school are offering. Something that I think you should be very proud of, because you put a lot of work into you know, various different areas. Most importantly, not just exams. I mean, exams are important, but it's not the be all and end all. There's a whole support package now that we offer. Obviously, trainees can find that information, but I didn't know if you wanted just to, you know, say some of the highlights or things that you felt that we've done that you're particularly proud of.
Yeah, I think it is we really do believe in supporting our trainees and recognising the challenges they face. We've roughly had different work streams. So we do recognise the challenges, particularly international medical graduates face. So we now have a 1 week paid shadowing week. It's a bit like an FY2 a bit like a medical student induction, where they can arrive and have a week shadowing funded within their trust before they start. So they really become, this is particularly for trainees that have not worked in the NHS.
Yes.
So they can have a funded week, really getting to understand prescribing and other factors of working within a trust. We also do a mandatory enhanced introduction to GP training for all our trainees that qualified outside of the UK.
Yes, had excellent feedback, I think.
Yeah, really, really good. We get the GMC to come, try not to be scary.
Yeah.
But there are often very significant differences as to what you can and can't do as a doctor in this country. So, for example, you know, the GMC is very clear that as a doctor in this country, I'm not allowed to prescribe or treat for myself or my family. And that isn't the case in all countries. So a trainee can run into problems because they're simply not aware of the differences. So again, that's about getting familiarity with the NHS and also about starting to build those really important relationships and peer support. We've got we've got peer pods, we've got a cultural team, we've got coaching, we've run coaching courses for both supervisors. We've also put coaching courses in for all of our trainees across the schemes because we very much recognise the importance of peer support. Going on to the curriculum team, so we definitely call it the curriculum, not just about passing the AKT.
Yes.
So we've got early introductory learning modules, dyslexia screening, webinars to prepare you to sit the AKT, webinars to support you if you were unsuccessful with the AKT. We've got a whole team of people who do one-to-ones with our trainees and also run learning sets for AKT and curriculum support. And then for the communications team, we've got communications workshops for all the half-day releases. We've got ST2 communication skills workshops and ST3 workshops. And really, the importance is, and I think one of the fundamental shifts is, we want to identify trainees and their educational needs early, and we want to get intervention is early. You don't want to, first time you find a trainee is when you find them in ST3 on extension, they failed an exam three times.
Yeah.
And that's just tragic for all of us. So we absolutely, absolutely want to pick up and identify the trainees early. And I really think we do know our trainees. I always, when I had new associate dean appointments, have to challenge them to know their trainees better than I do. And I do want to say that I do know all the trainees. You may not know that I know, and Tarek can smirk at this point because he knows that I know. I really get to know the trainees through their e-portfolios and their posts and their reports and their exam results. And we go through literally every trainee that sat every exam and make sure that we're optimizing the support that we're giving them within the GP school.
And one thing you mentioned about the learning sets that I think is always helpful is sometimes trainees think that their woes and their problems are personal to them alone, but we see it time and time again replicated amongst the trainees.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really easy to look at people and, you know, even when you walk down a street, you look and everybody else seems to have perfect lives and no problems. And they all seem happy and like they've got no problems. And actually, everybody has problems and everybody has difficulties and challenges in their life. And, you know, sometimes you need help with that. And that's not a thing for shame. It's not a thing for embarrassment. It is absolutely what we're here for. And, you know, it's a problem shared as a problem halved. And that really is true. And we are here to support you. You know, I can't necessarily solve every problem. One of the biggest challenges relates to our capacity, actually, and we are absolutely full on capacity. And I know that a frequent problem and a frequent difficulty for the trainees is traveling and commuting, and that often they have placements further away from their homes, and we know that's such a challenge when you've got to travel 2 hours each way. And sometimes they can feel that we're not listening and we don't understand because we're not able to facilitate a transfer, and that honestly is not the case. We do, you know, three-way, four-way transfers trying to get people to move, but it's simply there is no space. There is simply no space to move trainees from often from their allocated schemes to schemes particularly closer to London. And that's not because we don't care, and that's not because we haven't listened. It is simply that, you know, particularly Dartford, who I know Tarek covers, is full. We just can't gift it. It's not within my gift to move everybody.
Kent, sorry, in Sussex, is a huge area. As Kent says, it's a huge geographic area. And I would say that probably the way that the population of Kent, Surrey and Sussex is distributed doesn't map absolutely onto where the trainees live and where they're distributed, which inevitably causes a bit of imbalance, you know, which means that some schemes are sort of closer to those areas where we have more trainees. So they're obviously more popular.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the particular challenges at the moment also relates to the number of supervisors and the resilience of the practices. And we know, as you say, we've got a huge area, particularly East Kent and East Sussex, are struggling with regards to capacity of number of supervisors and trainee placements. The capacity issues are particularly been highlighted by our move to 24 months in GP. So all of our trainees starting now do 24 months in GP,
which is a national program. I mean, that's a national program. It's not something that we've designed. I think that's important to say. That was a national program that we had to implement.
Absolutely, but that just means, and absolutely, you're training to be a GP, you should be working in general practice. It is a good thing. It's just a difficult time to implement. And that sort of timely brings us to trainers.
Because I was going to come on to that. Thank you.
I think, you know, whilst it looks like we've put a lot of support in to practices, we are, into trainees, we are really mindful of the difficulties and the challenges that primary care has faced in the last 2.5 years, the pandemic, you know, the current awful, we've got strep A at the moment, which I know is absolutely overwhelming the local healthcare systems where I am. And, you know, trainers, it's a really difficult time, really, really difficult time. And finding the extra capacity, the extra time, the extra space for trainees can be challenging when in general partners are really struggling. And I very much am so grateful. I mean, I couldn't do this job without the primary care dean, Chris Warwick, who has been incredibly supportive in the transition and the change. Tarek, yourself and the other associate deans and the TPDs, but also how vital our GP supervisors are within practices, who always manage to squeeze an extra person into a, you know, a cupboard when we need them to. And, you know, we absolutely recognise that, and we're trying to look also at what we can do centrally to see if there are any more resources that we can put in. I do think sometimes, you know, a porter cabin in a car park, but probably that's not very practical. But certainly I want to recognise and thank all of our supervisors.
Yeah, that's lovely. That's really nice of you to say that. Because we know one of the areas, again, outside our control is the college exams. And the remote consultation assessment, which is something that we think is evolving and moving on and going to change. But it is something that has seemed to add an extra layer of complexity to the work of a trainer. I think that's fair to say.
I would absolutely agree. I think, you know, it was much more straightforward and I think less work intense to have the CSA, where really trainees just needed to consult. We always used to say the best practice for the CSA was actually just consulting patients.
Yeah.
And that now they have the recorded consultations, then they just seem to spend hours and hours and hours consulting, recording their consultations. And whilst we can use a video recording as an educational tool, this seems to be hours and hours and hours of recording patients to try and find the best cases to submit.
And I say to my trainees, I say to them, you know, you record anyone's 13 consultations, you're going to pick holes in them. They can always do things better. Does that perfect consultation really exist? You know, what is it that you're really trying to look for?
And I think absolutely, you can keep going and keep going and keep going. And where's the end point of that? So it really looks, we're hoping the new college exam for communication will be in autumn 23. Really, really fingers crossed. That is going to go back to a simulated surgery with standardized cases. I'd love it if it was 15 minutes. I'm happy to put my head up there. I think it may be 12 minutes. Personally, I think 12 minutes it really should be 15, but and it's going to be a simulated surgery, probably that the trainees sit in their own surgery and then they do remote cases of simulated actors for standardized cases, which will hopefully remove the need to do all this mass recording.
Yes.
And we'll go back just to having recordings for an educational tool, but not recording and recording and recording of cases to submit.
Yeah. And that might include some phone, some sort of video type work. I think the key that you're saying there that's important is that those cases are not only standardized, but should be doable within that time, because as we know, as you're absolutely right in saying that general practice at the moment, to be able to get a perfect case to fit in a perfect time within 12 minutes, it's difficult. And patients are always going to bring other things.
Yeah. It's difficult, and especially things like mental health.
Sure.
Certainly, I couldn't do a good mental health consultation in 12 minutes. And I think, you know, when a patient's very distressed, I think that's incredibly difficult to do in 12 minutes. So I would like to see 15, but unfortunately, I don't make the rules. So it may stay at 12.
But it's interesting you say that, because I think that distress is important to get out. There's something about that distress coming out that, you know, not just sort of bottling it up and trying to sort of stop it, because actually that's the part of the catharsis, isn't it? So,
absolutely.
You know, that's as well, you know, why the time is needed. On top of, often they'll have other comorbidities and other problems and other medication issues as well. So it's the part of healing, not just the part of good medicine, which, you know, can take longer too. So I think,
absolutely. It's the consultation as a treatment in itself, really, which you're missing if you're trying to rush something that shouldn't be that time. So absolutely.
I just wanted to finish on a more cheerful note. So often we hear from you in the bulletins, and if people have ideas for the bulletin, can I say that would be okay for them to? I know that you've often asked for, you know, things before. So if trainees or trainers have ideas or things that they think might be helpful, things that they're doing locally that they want to spread out to the network, then the bulletin that you produce is a really good resource, and that's, you know, really helpful. Is there anything that you would like to say sort of as a roundup to the network finishing, you know, this year, a snowy end to the year at the moment? We're talking in mid-December, and I can see snow outside and ice on the ground. Anything you want to say to round up to them?
I think I think it is just really, it may be cliched, I think it's just about looking after yourself and looking after those around you. I think, as I say, certainly where I'm sitting for the local challenges with currently the Strep A are really putting a pressurised system under even more pressure. So I really think to say that, you know, we are genuinely here to help people. We are genuinely here to support within the system and support each other. And I think it's just look after yourself, take care, thank everybody for all their incredible work in within the GP school. We've really got a GP school that hopefully we can all be proud of. We very much believe in support of our and success of our trainees. And I think it's just try and take a moment to find that moment of joy over the next in the season's holidays.
Yeah, that's
lovely.
Thank
you, Tarek.
No, thank you very much. I'm not sure when this will go out, so it might be into the new year. By then, people will be listening and things will have moved on. But I think that message of joy, a lovely one to end on. Thanks very much, Liz.
Thanks very much, Tarek. Thank you.